Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Herr alongside today as he and Jason Johnson pour through IndyCar Media Day and its relevancy.
I saw the transcripts. There wasn't anything huge that came out of her. I would have shared it with you.
Well, they already canceled Brazil, so I guess there are no more cancellations?
Not yet. That wasn't IndyCar's fault, though.
Oh, no. No.
That was a dumb promoters in Brazil.
And this is where you want to go for the Olympics, and you're calling them dumb?
Well, it wasn't in that part of Brazil.
Where do you think they're holding the Olympics? Just in one spot?
Yeah, just in one city.
They put it to a vote in Boston. I'm telling you, it's in flames. Flames. All right, as you may have heard, that Patrick Chambers reprimanded by the Big Ten, violation of sportsmanship for his postgame comments against Maryland, and there's a $10,000 fine. And on this Mardi Gras, and yes, Kevin, all dressed up, beads and everything in the studio for Mardi Gras, we bring in Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber. Hi, Sandy, welcome back.
Well, happy Mardi Gras, gentlemen. Having spent 9 days at or 9 years at Tulane and 9 years in New Orleans, today's got a special place in my heart.
I'm sure it does, and I'm sure off the air stories. All right, let's get to Patrick's situation. You watched how it all played out, plus the post game. Just your in general terms, your thoughts on how it's all played out.
Well, hey, it's real simple for me. I love Patrick's passion, most importantly for his student athletes, for the game, for the Penn State program, for our ability to be, successful. I support that. You know, there's obviously a lot that goes into that, from his coaching and that of his staff to our student athletes and the way they perform on the court, and then a lot of moving parts around it, and I support Patrick's passion.
You and I both know what the rules are. I mean, in the conference, everyone knows. I mean, when it was said, I think everyone pretty much assumed that, you know, it would play out in this way. But there was also nothing publicly mentioned that, look, even though a mistake was made, these are the rules. Should we have been surprised by that? Were you surprised by that?
Look, it's, you know, again, we do know the rules. I think they're very clear. It's behind us. We're, you know, all of our efforts have been focused on, you know, what's best for our student athletes and demanding the best of others who support the efforts of our student athletes and we're moving forward.
Sandy, in moving forward, you have now had a chance to get a feel for what Patrick Chambers and his staff are doing with the program. What is your evaluation of where it is and where it can go?
Well, I'll tell you this, and this was a little bit a part of what we just talked about. You know, Patrick Chambers demands a lot out of his staff, a lot out of his student athletes. We're not having the kind of success on the court that I believe, and I know Patrick does too, we agree on this, that that those student athletes in this community deserve. But I believe that we are headed in the right direction. Again, it's not manifesting itself in the win column the way maybe we thought it would. But I think where we're going with these kids, the recruiting obviously has really pointed up. And I'll tell you this, Patrick Chambers is my guy. He's going to be with us, and I believe he's going to build us a long-term, sustainable winner at Penn State, and I support every ounce of that.
Now, let's get to the next part. As the athletic director, what can successful men's basketball then mean for the overall picture and health of an athletic department to go in combination with football and now what we've seen in ice hockey?
Well, I think you're talking about there are two separate aspects to that. One is, you know, which of your programs have the opportunity to contribute to the healthy net revenue overall, right, of your program. And we've got, you know, every one of our programs can increase their net revenue to the department, or close the gap, if you will, in some of them. Certainly you've mentioned three in football and men's basketball and ice hockey that have an opportunity to produce revenue. And I think that every opportunity we have to do that, we need to take advantage of. Again, not to make a profit. We're a nonprofit organization,
right,
but it's about supporting 850 to 900 student athletes in 31 programs across the board. And our ability in men's basketball to be successful, to get into the postseason, to get into NCAA postseason, helps build that success brand and that expectation of excellence that is that we find in every aspect of Penn State University.
Something I think athletic directors could have thought about maybe a year ago on this date, but it wasn't to fruition yet, was 24/7 meals or food opportunity, including walk-ons, and also cost of attendance. What has that meant budgets in terms of a budget for an athletic director now trying to plan that out? Because 1-2 years ago, whether you were at Cal or here, that really wasn't on the books for you.
Well, actually, Steve, it was. I mean, we cost of attendance has been in our sights for over 4 years. And I think anybody who wasn't looking at what that could cost us, now we didn't know exactly what form it was going to take, but anybody who's not been paying attention to that and wasn't thinking, okay, I'm going to have to add $500,000, $1 million, in our case, $1.7 million, so it's going to be instituted for fall of 2015, for a program of our size that will cost us $1.7 million. The meal, basically lifting restrictions on meals with an eye towards nutrition for these high performing student athletes is, you know, that one's a little bit more difficult, because I shouldn't say more difficult, that one's got a little bit more latitude in terms of how you handle that, the different steps you can take. We've probably experienced an incremental cost of about $750,000, $750,000, okay, this year, and we'll probably be upwards of $1 million in incremental costs next year.
Because, as you properly point out, that is a part of their training. If you're going to lift, you're going to have to also fuel yourself as well. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And we're not talking about king cake.
Right. On this day we can, but not the rest of the year. Now, when it comes to the bowl money, just the importance of getting it back in place starting with the 2015 season. What can that help you get down the road to eventually doing?
Well, Steve, I mean, that's over, it's going to be north of $6 million.
Yep.
For next year, that we now have an opportunity to include in our budget. This was a very forward-thinking institution in terms of under the previous leadership, and now certainly under Eric Barron's leadership, around, okay, what do we do? We have an athletic program that's very, very important to the heart and soul of this institution, to the community. It's very important that we provide conditions for success for our student athletes, and how do we do that? And the part of how we have approached that is through a series of $10 million loans to the department, of which we're going to have to repay, but at least we had the opportunity to remain relatively whole. So we can now look at that $6 million plus coming in next year as we either don't have to take part or all of that loan, or we have a lot of one-time costs, particularly as they relate to capital projects and needs around facilities, that we'll certainly analyze and take a look at how we get those done.
The next television contract is going to be very important. Will that television contract have the potential to allow Penn State to turn the corner in the athletic department in the way you would like to see it done across the board?
Well, wherever that the media contract goes, and there's so many unknowns right now in the media world as they relate to cable television and satellite television and media rights and right. How they're going to be split up, and what's the new technology out there? What's the next way that consumers are going to consume sports on television? You know, we got to be a little bit of a crystal ball. So I do think we've got a great product. We Penn State, we the Big Ten Conference have great value out there in the marketplace. I don't know what that's going to bring. And then ultimately, it's going to benefit obviously the entire conference. So I don't know that we're going to be able to differentiate ourselves there. Those resources will certainly help us. You know, if you take a look at the college football world, up until this year and up until Ohio State winning the national championship, the SEC had dominated that conversation. With that trophy now resides in our own conference. But certainly those monies would help us to differentiate ourselves from the SEC or from the ACC or from my former home in the Pac-12, but every one of our conference colleagues is going to have access to those exact same resources.
No question. You mentioned in the previous answer, Penn State President Dr. Eric Barron. He has announced plans to create an office for Title IX issues beginning for the fall semester. Discuss the importance of that, Sandy.
Well, particularly people in the athletics world think of Title IX, we think about the Title IX athletics and protecting the opportunities for students and the underrepresented gender, underrepresented sex. Nowhere in Title IX does it mention women.
Right.
it mentions the underrepresented sex, and I keep telling folks that, one day, as our population is going, men are going to be the underrepresented sex, and Title IX is going to protect them from a participation standpoint. But really what Dr. Barron is talking about is the other side of Title IX, which has to do with sexual assault.
Yep.
and incidents across campuses, and great work being done by our student affairs folks, our dean or our vice president for student affairs, Damon Sims, and a task force that one of our associate athletic directors, Charmel Green, also sat on, in terms of how do we best provide opportunities and best protect our students and faculty and staff, but in this particular case, mainly around students, and what's best in class, what is best practice around that, and that's really what Dr. Barron's trying to get at.
And finally, the Pac-12 put together a proposal dealing with freshman eligibility. Obviously, this needs study, thought, and so forth. You were out there. I'm sure you heard the conversation when you were at Cal anyway. So what's your initial thought on what should be looked at and considered?
Yeah, I think this is a really critical question for all of college athletics, no matter what seat you sit in, whether you're on the West Coast or the East Coast or somewhere in between. And I think more than anything else, the idea of returning to, because again, we were there at one point in time, returning to freshman ineligibility is one that needs to be discussed. I think it needs to be discussed around time demands and readiness for our student athletes, and giving them the opportunity to really access these great educations on these campuses where they are, and obviously particularly on ours from my perspective at Penn State. I find it really, really interesting that as you look at the discussion around amateurism and you look at the discussion around pay for play and image and likeness and unionization, there isn't anything there that paying student athletes solves. You know, Richard Sherman, the Super Bowl week, talks about his difficulties at Stanford in having time to be a true student. Well, a paycheck doesn't solve that.
Right.
More money doesn't solve that. But really looking at, are they prepared when they come to campus, and what kind of time do they have to truly be students? I think that gets at the issue. And I think that freshman ineligibility is really just a flamethrower in there to get us to talk at it, talk about it, and look at it. I actually don't like it because I think it's unfair to the kids that do have the ability to take it on.
Interesting. Hey, thanks so much for the time, as always. And by the way, thanks for sitting up in the booth with Dick Girardi and me for a while the other night. We enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director, will come back. Kevin Herr's complete analysis, as only he can do it, in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
I barely said two words to you during the break.
All you talked about was IndyCar, Sage Karam, and all this other stuff.
I just let you know that Sage Karam is going to be driving this year. It's nice to see another local-ish guy in the series.
We're just coming off a really important interview. That's all you thought about?
Did I say it was a bad interview? I mean, I thought there was a lot of great stuff in there. I thought it was amazing that it was going to cost over $1 million. What was it, $1.7 million with the new food situation?
No, it's $750,000 for food, $1.7 million for cost of attendance.
Okay, it was cost of attendance. All right. That was the overall thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a stipend. Comes down to Penn State about $4,000 per full student athlete. Well, tomorrow we'll turn the corner on this. Jeff Rice is going to join us from 24/7 Sports to talk about the fine, reprimand, and so forth. And there isn't a single person who didn't expect it. But at the same, you know. Also, I'll say this. Pat's also in this bind here. Going forward from here, he can't really say much of anything going forward. He's already been fined now, you know, or the institution fined this time. He's been reprimanded. At the same time, you do not want to suddenly do it so often that, stop crying wolf, win. You know what I mean? That's the kind of the box, the bind he's in.
And that's going to be the next step. I mean, they're at that frustrating stage right now. And I've talked about this before, where you take over, you need to rebuild. I don't want Penn State back to a rebuilding spot. I don't want that. I don't want to start over with somebody else. I really don't. I want to see how far this guy can take it. I've seen him come in, take over, be a caretaker, start to recruit, lose some games 15-25, which I've seen how many times in my career anyway, and now get it right up to that line where it's a 1-2 possession game one way or the other against really good competition in the Big Ten. So I want to now see how far he can take it, because I've seen how far he's taken to this point. Now you're at that frustrating part where can you finally get over that line, start winning consistently, and then more so than that, maybe start winning by a margin like 5-10, where it doesn't matter if there's a call made in a game. I mean, that's where it's got to go, and I think he'll take it there. I mean, I want to see if he can take it there. Sometimes leadership is making that big picture decision. We spend too much time making short-sighted decisions left and right where it's in the moment. That's why I talked about leaders, decision-makers, schemers, and incompetence. Leaders make big-picture decisions.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, we may have lapsed into a legal situation here on the show.
I don't think we did.
I think we have.
I do not think we did.
I think you're stalking.
No, this is not even close to stalking.
It's cyber stalking. Go ahead, tell the audience what you did.
Well, I found out that Sage Karam from Nazareth, the 19-year-old, will be running St. Pete, which is the opener for the IndyCar Series. He ran the Indianapolis 500 and actually almost became Rookie of the Year and had a great race. So it was great to see. You know, I had a chance to talk to him a couple of years ago at Pocono, and I just sent out a tweet that said, you know, that my son loved talking wrestling with him at Pocono 2 years ago. And it's great to see that Sage will be racing at St. Pete.
Hey. It's the before part that concerns me.
The before part?
Let me see if Sage Karam's on Twitter. Oh, he is.
Well, I don't know. You misunderstood that completely.
My reenactment of it is actually very close.
No, I was attaching Sage's Twitter tag or Twitter handle to it. That's what I was saying. Oh, he's on Twitter. Great.
How old are you? How old are you? I mean, really.
Old enough to have a kid almost Sage's age.
Then don't tweet him.
I was going to put his name in it, and then I saw he was on Twitter. I'm like, okay, I'll just put his handle on it, too. Hey, Steve, I got Nathan on the line, wants to talk, has a couple of questions about Penn State basketball for you.
Nathan, tell me you don't want to talk IndyCar. I can't take it anymore.
First, a comment. I think the $10,000 is a bargain just for the ESPN coverage alone. But okay. my general question about the program is, without DJ next year, where are they going to get offense from?
Well, they're going to get offense actually from a couple different areas. Start out with Geno Thorpe, who's become a better offensive player this year. Shep Garner will then probably have a greater role in what they're doing offensively. It'll start with Brandon Taylor. I think you're really going to like Nathan Josh Reeves, who will come in and ultra-talented guy out of Oak Hill, and then Mike Watkins underneath. They actually will have probably more scoring options next year than they actually do this year. And I think they'll be able to spread the offense out more because of that, instead of focusing just on one very talented player in DJ. I think you'll probably find 4 to 5 different scoring options out there at any given point. We lost him. Nathan?
I think we did.
He was taken aback by the Sage Karam thing. He doesn't want to be associated with
it. I knew you were going to blame that on me.
Nathan doesn't want to be associated with a cyber stalker.
It is not. Oh, I'm. No. No. Not going to have that argument.
I knew you'd give in. All right. Let's bring in Jeff Rice. 24/7 Sports. Jeff, it played out. We saw it down the stretch as to how it played out. You never know. Even with Jordan Dickerson still in the game, the call's not made, whatever. I mean, Des Wells could hit 2 threes for all we know. So we don't know how it's going to turn out. And I think in all fairness, I think a lot of people have to realize that.
And exactly. I mean, you know, after that play, Newbill makes a great, amazing play to strip the ball from Wells and gets a steal, and then he goes down the floor and turns it over. I mean, it was that tightrope that Penn State was kind of walking pretty much the whole second half, the whole season, really.
What about the fact that the Big Ten, in its release, talked about Patrick Chambers, talked about the rule, then closed it, but didn't recognize that the call was wrong?
That's, I think, what has a lot of people irritated, and I think that's what, you know, we asked Patrick yesterday if there was going to be any sort of formal complaint from Penn State's part about that call, and I'm wondering if Penn State wasn't sort of waiting to see how the Big Ten handled it, and their response was basically, you know, Chambers violated the sportsmanship rule, we're going to reprimand him, we're going to fine Penn State, but there was no sort of accountability there, and I think the ball is kind of in Penn State's court now to say, hey, look, you know, we'll accept the fine. We know that we violated that rule, but there was still a call there that has been sort of nationally recognized as the wrong call by people far beyond State College and lots of different basketball circles. People said, you know, hey, Chambers was right. That was a call to get mad about. And so far the Big Ten has yet to acknowledge that, as far as I know.
Because the way I've looked at it is that they actually by fining him and reprimanding them, they could have made actually a stronger statement about all of it by saying, while the Big Ten recognizes an incorrect call was made, a press conference is not the time to air a grievance. Thus, he violated rule da-da-da-da and a $10,000. To me, that has more punch to it.
Exactly, because you're not only, you know, you're setting the table for other coaches. You're sort of providing the chart saying, hey, look, you know, we might get calls wrong. These are human beings officiating the games, but, you know, don't use the post-game press conference
right. As
the forum for doing it. But they didn't do that, and I think it has the fact that they haven't offered any sort of apology or even discuss the call in any capacity is what's going to have a lot of people sweat it off.
Well, you know, again, you know, the ability to see the big picture on something is something that you get concerned with sometimes, because saying that actually would have been a big picture way to do it. Doing it the way they did and not recognizing it, thus putting it on the table. Look, don't use a press conference to complain about it. There are other avenues. We do understand something happened. The way they did it was short-sighted.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to basketball. Kaminsky and company coming in tomorrow night. You mentioned the Penn State's had these a number of 1-2 possession games. How anxious are you just to see Kaminsky in person this particular season and as a potential National Player of the Year candidate?
It's going to be fun to watch him just because he's really kind of a Lamborghini in a tractor trailer's body. I mean, the guy just plays like a guard. He doesn't even play like a small forward. He plays like a guard, both in terms of the shooting ability, the way he sees the floor, the way he passes the ball, even a lot of the way he handles the ball. And there's really not too many ways to stop him. Even if you're just talking about Frank Kaminsky, without Sam Decker, without Nigel Hayes, without Bo Ryan's system, And I think, you know, Wisconsin has had a lot of players in the past who have really been beneficiaries of that system, and I think it's made them better players than they might have been in other places. You know, for a while they had, you know, they had their Bergrins, their Tuckers, their stars, but they had a lot of just guys who were role players, who were, you know, 2- and 3-star recruits that just kind of, you know, went under the radar. But a lot of schools came to Wisconsin, found their niche, found their way in the system, and thrived under Ryan. But Kaminsky is a guy that would thrive in any system with any team. Penn State's going to have a hard time stopping them. You know, you've got, on one hand, you've got three big men you can go to, Dickerson, Jack, and Moore, to kind of take turns on him and maybe, you know, stay out of foul trouble. On the other hand, he's a guy that can get them in foul trouble pretty quickly, in addition to Decker, Hayes, and just, you know, the natural pressure that Wisconsin puts on the defense.
I think Trey Jackson being out has hurt their rotation and their depth. Koenig starting has actually made their starting five better when I've watched them. What have you thought watching them of late?
It's tough because, you know, right after they played Penn State, they had the Kaminsky injury and Jackson went out and they got a little discombobulated for a while. But I think they've, you know, like Ryan does almost every year, they found ways to make it work. Chambers was talking about that yesterday. You know, they've had John Johnson out. They had Taylor hurt. But they've been able to kind of patch things up because of depth. Penn State has that depth now that they didn't have in previous years, where an injury to a Brandon Taylor might have been detrimental, you know, even for a short time. I think Wisconsin has that depth. I don't think their depth gets talked about enough. You know, Ryan's done a great job not only getting guys to play in his system, but developing enough depth where he can switch, you know, move a guy in case of injury and not miss too much of a beat. The thing to me about this Wisconsin team that stands out from the past was they're not afraid to go put 75. In the past, they'd go into your place and they'd slow you down and they'd run their offense and they'd put up a shot with 2 seconds left on the shot clock and they'd beat you, you know, 57-52. You know, now they can put 57 points on you in 35 minutes and not even sweat. That's the challenge, because they can play, you know, any pace, they can play any style, they can play small, they can play big. You know, I think Penn State obviously has their hands full, but Penn State's played well at home. So it could be an interesting game. I think Penn State's hoping it will be an interesting game, because the alternative is that it's a not interesting game that doesn't end well for the hosts.
Early morning workouts are happening for football right now. The first day of spring practice is scheduled for March 20th. The coaches, each position coach tweets out the person of the morning workout that stood out to them in their group. What have you been reading from those tweets and from those Twitter messages going through to give you an impression of where they're going?
I've always said that Franklin and his staff, you know, Herb Hand, but even a lot of those other guys, they're very social media savvy, and I think this is a good example of that, because what this does, it's putting a positive spotlight on people. It's generating, you know, some buzz, some interest, some positivity in a time where it's the middle of winter. There's not much else going on from a football standpoint. Okay, so that's first of all, you're encouraging guys. You're not just encouraging them within the walls of the last building. You're encouraging them in the public forum. I think what it also does, or what it has the potential to do, is it motivates players. So in other words, if you're a player and you think you've had a pretty strong workout, and one of your teammates is named the quote-unquote winner of your position group, maybe it inspires you to work a little bit harder. Or maybe after 3 or 4 weeks go by and you think you're hitting it hard and working out well and you still haven't been named, then that's going to drive you to do more. By the same token, if you get the first honor of the, you know, season or whatever, you're honored, you did a great job, it's motivation for you to continue to do that. So I think it's not only, like I said, generating some good pub, but it's also a good motivational factor, again, at a time where you really need to put the work in, when there's not, you know, fans watching, there's not a game to play on Saturday. This is when they need to get a lot of important work done. But the more motivators you can provide for these guys, especially when they're getting up at, you know, early hours of the morning when it's -2 degrees outside to go to the last building, the better.
Jeff, you talked about the use of the coaching staff and social media and how they get it. For you and your job, plus and minus, what has social media meant for you?
I think plus is that it's a way for us to get more exposure and more eyes on our content, whether that's stories or quick hitters or, you know, any sort of info, we can reach a wider audience quickly. You know, in the past, I think since we've expanded, before we expanded our Twitter and our Facebook audience, somebody might read a story that we wrote, you know, a day later or a few hours later. Now we can reach those same people within a span of a few minutes. That's helped. I think it's helped us develop a national brand, not just for Lions 24/7, but the 24/7 sports brand in general. The negative is that I think you can get so many, you wind up chasing your tail on social media a lot. You'll see something a player or a prospect tweets and you'll read into it, or you see fans interacting with players or recruits in a way that they just shouldn't be doing, and you want to tell them to stop, but it just becomes, you know, it's like anything else. It brings out some good things in people. It brings out some not so good things in people. I've enjoyed it, but I'm, you know, I'm learning to understand the pros and the cons, when it's appropriate to tweet things, when it's not appropriate to tweet things, things like that. And it's, I teach a journalism class at Penn State as well, and I'm trying to get those same lessons across to my students. And, you know, just my main message is, hey, whether you're tweeting as a regular student or in a professional capacity, be smart. Be aware that, you know, even if you delete it, if the tweet's up there for 2 seconds, that's all it needs to be up there for. So just have a good, you know, good head on your shoulders about it. And I think that's what Franklin and the other coaches preach to not only all the players on the current team, but, you know, you see Herb Hand constantly tweeting out sort of general advice for prospects. How they represent themselves during the recruiting process is a big deal for a lot of coaches, including the ones at Penn State.
Well, you always represent yourself with the greatest of journalistic integrity. We always enjoy having you on. Jeff, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve. Take-
Jeff Rice, 24/7 Sports. We'll come back with cyber stalking in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Our thanks to Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber. You can check it out on our podcast, stevejonesshow.com. And, of course, Jeff Rice, 24/7 Sports. Also, I talked baseball today with Charlie Wilmoth of Bucks Dugout, because pitchers and catchers, believe it or not, report in 2 days. And then Kevin, through all of this, sent me an article from ABC News. And well, IndyCar is headed in the right direction.
Yeah, we could talk about that a little bit later, but I do have Dick from Milton on the line for you, Steve.
Dick, thanks for saving the show. Welcome.
Well, I'm going to maybe not save your show. It was a good show, by the way, but I'm actually going to defend Kevin for a minute. But, you know, since they use three officials in basketball, how come they don't ask each other for help on a call more often like they do in baseball? I mean, I don't understand that. That's what they're there for. Aren't they all looking at the same game pretty much at the same time?
Yeah, but they were looking all at different spots of the floor too, so it's not quite as simple. It's not quite as simple as that. Sometimes I'll see an overrule happen because they were both looking at the same thing and one saw it and the other one didn't. Yeah, and that's when overrules. That's when overrules do occur.
Yeah, but I think you see less overrules in basketball than in baseball. I don't tell you they overrule a lot,
but I guess. But in baseball, there's one play, one movement, and one everything. Everybody's looking at the same play, usually. In basketball, there's so many moving parts. It's a little more difficult. It's not as easy as baseball because there's too many. There's many more moving parts on a play.
I understand that. Well, anyhow, what I wanted to kind of defend Kevin was, and this is how I use my every New Year calendar. I look for the golf tournaments in Hawaii. I look for the Australian Open in tennis. I look for Daytona in Florida and spring training. Then I know I'm getting close to fishing season. I don't even have to look at a calendar. I just see what's on television.
And the Masters.
Yeah, well, that's a little later on. But I'm saying but that's how I look for spring coming on is golf in Hawaii. Tennis in Australia, Daytona in Florida, and then spring training. And I know, by God, it's going to be spring real soon.
And then when you hit the Masters, you know bass season's just around the corner.
There you are, and that's all I'm waiting for.
Let me put it this way, Dick. Tomorrow night, the ice fishermen are in town. Wisconsin.
Well, they got ice.
So do we.
Oh. I know it. Anyhow, nice show.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Dick. So IndyCar's headed in the right direction, huh?
Well, listen, I know you poke fun at my love of IndyCar.
Did he ever get back to you?
No, he has not gotten back to me yet, all right? I'll keep you updated tomorrow.
Okay, check out the windows. The station currently surrounded by the FBI.
No, not yet.
Because he may have gotten to somebody about it.
I think one of the most promising things that came out of IndyCar Media Day, and I know we've joked about it, but I'm serious about this. I think this is a really good idea. Mark Miles is the CEO of Hallman & Company, which basically controls IndyCar. He has a great idea to make the IndyCar season do something that NASCAR should have done. They started out, but they went too long into the season, and now they're ended up going into November. He wants to start like a week or two after the Super Bowl and end on Labor Day weekend because he realizes that the television ratings decline about 30% after Labor Day because of the NFL. And, you know, when you realize that college football and the NFL are going to be the king of fall, you might as well, you know, cater to that and make yourself in a time slot that has that capability. So what he's saying is maybe we do it we start the season a week or two after the Super Bowl ends. We end the season before the first regular season NFL game and a lot of the college football games, and we can race a lot of weekends in there and maybe skip for like March Madness weekends, and we'll skip weekends like the opening weekend of Major League Baseball. I think he's got the right idea. I think this is something that, you know, that NASCAR should have looked into instead of making the season longer.
Oh, look, there's a sale at Macy's.
It would also be nice to see IndyCar at Phoenix. Warmer weather places like that.
Ah, there's some music.
I don't care what you say. I love it. I'm going to support it. What, did you quit?
I'm thinking about it. Might have to sleep on this one. Are you going to talk about this tomorrow?
No, it's not media day tomorrow.
The ice fisherman cometh.